All right, so we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Mem Ched and Aleph. Hallel ve'asimcha shmona. So you say Hallel for all 8 days. So 7 days of Sukkot plus Shmini Atzeret. Simcha, the Shlamim, also the Simcha of Shlamim, Shalmei Simcha, applied to the 7 days of Sukkot as well as to Shmini Atzeret. Ketzad, melamed shechayav adam behallel ubesimcha ubechvod yom tov acharon shechag kashag yol yomot achag. From this, you would conclude, it's an interesting Ketzad. Usually Ketzad is an explanation of how, but here the Gemara uses the how to give you the information, which is that Shmini Atzeret has the trappings like any other day of Sukkot, which means that you have Hallel, Simcha, and Kavod Yom Tov like any other day of Yom Tov. So that's the statement of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Menahani Mile. How do we know that the Shmini is Chayav B'Simcha? The Tarnu Rabbanan, because the Pasuk says, Vayitach Sameach. The Rabot, Lele Yom Tov Acharon. Comes to include the night of the last day of Yom Tov, or maybe it's the night of the first day. So let's just think about this in context. You have 7 days of Sukkot, and then you have the 8th day of Shmini Atzeret. In terms of the Shlamim, the Gemara says here, you have a pasuk which says, V'samachta b'chagecha. So that's a requirement that you have Simcha on the Chag, that you have Shalmei Simcha through the Chag. Shlamim can only be brought during the daytime, and when they're brought in the daytime, then they're good for the subsequent night, and then the subsequent day, 2 days and one night. So when you get into the first night of Sukkot, to have Shalmei Simcha, you'd actually have to bring the Shlamim prior to Sukkot. And we learned earlier in the Masechta, there's a machloket about that, whether you can actually create the Shalmei Simcha before Yom Tov, or they have to be the Zvicha, the Shechita has to be on the same time as the Zmana Simcha, as Akhtarat HaSimcha, and therefore you couldn't do it. So the Gemara here is debating, which night am I including over here? Am I including the first night of Sukkot, where I'd have to bring the Shlamim prior to Sukkot? Or am I including the first night of Shmini Atzeret, because I would have to bring the Shlamim on Sukkot in order to engender the ability to have Simcha at the night of Simcha Torah? So I have to pick which one of those it is. So that's what the Gemara has a question. It has, V'samachta b'chagecha. And then the pasuk says Vayitach Sameach, which is unnecessary. It's a duplication of Samachta B'Chagecha. So Vayitach Sameach, the Gemara says, comes to include something additional. What is that additional item? So the bright starts out, the Rabot Lili Yom Tov Acharon. So that's the assumption. But then the Gemara says, but maybe not. Oin Lili Yom Tov Rishon. Kushu Omer Ach Chilek. It says Ach Chilek tells you one and not the other. Ma Ra'it El Rabot Lili Yom Tov Acharon Otzi Lili Yom Tov Rishon. How do you know which one it is? You have to pick one yes, one no. How do you know, what's the logic behind picking one or the other? So, I'm going to include the last night, meaning the night of Shmini Atzeret, which has Simcha before it. All the days before it have a din in Simcha because it's Sukkot prior to then. And the first day of Sukkot, that first night, has no Simcha before it to lead into that night. So I prefer to have the night of Shmini Atzeret included in Simcha rather than the first night of Sukkot. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says, then based on that, we'll have a Kal Vachomer. If at night you require Simcha, then certainly during the day of Shmini Atzeret you will require Simcha. The night, which is a lower form of the Yom Tov, nevertheless, we're going to demand that you have Simcha from the leftovers from Sukkot, and certainly on the day of Shmini Atzeret itself, you have to have Simcha. Based on that, we have a din of Simcha on Shmini Atzeret from Vayitach Sameach. Vayitach Sameach teaches you that we have a requirement of Simcha on Shmini Atzeret. What's interesting is that we don't generally have a requirement of Simcha, like we don't say by Shavuot or by Pesach, there's a din of Simcha. It's all learned out of Sukkot, because it says, V'samachta b'chagecha, and V'yitach sameach, V'samachta b'chagecha teaches you have Shalmei Simcha, and then we extrapolate that. But you have the Shalmei Simcha apply to each of these holidays, and we extrapolate it from Sukkot. So here, the Gemara doesn't do that by Shmini Atzeret, which is interesting, just because you're a regular, you should have a din of Simcha. You could argue, which is a fair argument, is that the connection between the Shlosh Regalim exists only for the 7 days of Sukkot, and not for Shmini Atzeret. A number of places where the Shlosh Regalim are mentioned together, in those instances, it's only Sukkot, Shavuot, and Pesach, doesn't include Shmini Atzeret. Shmini Atzeret only appears in Parshat Emor, Parshat Pinchas, and Parshat Re'eh. So maybe the parallel between the Shlosh Regalim is tighter for the Sukkot itself than it is for Shmini Atzeret, and that's why the Gemara has to look for a separate limud to give Simcha to Shmini Atzeret, not just because it's part of a regel. I mean, just because it's a regel should be enough to demand Simcha. Here the Gemara looks for another limud, maybe because Shmini Atzeret is not as clearly connected to the other three regalim. It's more connected to Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, it shares the same Korbanei Musaf as Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and not of the other holidays. So because of that, it has a deeper parallel to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, where Simcha is not as clearly defined. We don't say Halal on those days. And as the Rambam says, there's a Yemei Simcha, but not Simcha Yiterat. There is a certain amount of diminishment of Simcha on those days because they're Yemei Adin. And because of that, Shmini Atzeret might fall into that category where you need a specific limud to have it have Simcha. Next Mishnah, Sukkah Shiva Ketzat. You stay in the Sukkah for 7 days. How does that work? Gamar Melechol. If he finishes eating on the seventh day, lo yatir et sukkato. You cannot dismantle the sukkah. V'morida de kelim min amincha ulamalo. In the afternoon, you can take out the kelim from the sukkah. Mipnei kvod yom tov acharon shelchag. In order to prepare for Shmini Atzeret, where you're going to eat in the house, and you have yom tov in the house, you need whatever you're using in the sukkah, you need in the house now. So you can do that. You can already start bringing them down on the latter half of the day on Hoshana Rabo. So ein lo kelim lohorid mahu. If he doesn't have kelim to bring down, then how does he signify that he's leaving the sukkah and moving into the house? Ein lo kelim. What do you mean ein lo kelim? Elaki ishtamesh, b'may ishtamesh. If he doesn't have kelim, then what is he eating on? What's the whole story here? That he needs to do something. He doesn't have anything to eat on. Then you have bigger problems than worrying about the taking down the sukkah. So, ain lo makom lo rid kelav. He has no place in the house to bring down the kelim. That means that they are going to remain in the sukkah. Mahu, what is the din? If you have to eat in the sukkah on the eighth day, what do you do in order not to be a problem about tosif? 7 days of sukkah, you're not supposed to eat in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Not talking about Chutz La'aretz, talking about in Eretz Yisrael. So now, if you eat in the sukkah, you might be in a problem about tosif. So how do I sit in the sukkah without violating the issue of Baal Tosif? So here, this is the suggestion. What's the din? Rabbi Chia bar Ashi Amar Pochei ba'arba'ah. He has to dismantle 4 tefachim of the schach. By doing that, you passel the sukkah. And if you have a sukkah psula, then you don't have to worry about the issue of sitting in the sukkah Baal Tosif, because you're not sitting in a sukkah anymore. You're sitting in a pasul sukkah, which is obviously not a sukkah. Now Tosfot asked the question, we have many ways to pass a sukkah. Why did the Gemara pick, and this might answer your question, Fred, why did the Gemara pick the 4 tefachim? We know that airspace does the same thing. You don't even need 4 tefachim, you need 3 tefachim in airspace. And airspace helps you ben min atzad, ben b'amso. 4 tefachim only helps you in the amso, does not help you on the sides. So Tosfot says, I don't know why the Gemara picked this 4 tefachim, it could have picked the 3 tefachim. The Ritva over here says, the reason the Gemara picked 4 tefachim is because if you have 3 walls to your sukkah, and then you have a benir space of 3 tefachim, you will pass on the sukkah, because then you'll no longer have 3 walls. If you have a 4-wall sukkah, then you won't pass on the sukkah, because you just divide the sukkah in half, and then you'll be able to use 3 walls on each side, and it's not a pasul sukkah. So what the Ritva suggests is that because of that problem of 4 walls, the Gemara tells you to take down 4 tefachim. If you take down 4 tefachim, even if you have 4 walls, you have the same problem again, which is you will have 3 walls of sukkahs on each side. But 4 tefachim is always considered to be a makom chashuv in halacha. That's how we got to 4 tefachim for pasul schach, is because that is a makom chashuv. Since it is a makom chashuv already, then it's recognizable that you've done something to change the nature of the sukkah. And because of that, even though you don't make the sukkah necessarily pasul, the fact that you did it and did something significant, it's a heker. It's not going to undo the whole sukkah. It's just going to make a small change to the sukkah, which takes out 4 tefachim of schach. By doing that, already indicates that he is sitting in the sukkah, not because it's a sukkah, but because he has no room in the house. And that heker already makes it obvious enough that he's not sitting in the sukkah, he's not trying to bring another day of Sukkot, and that might help your question from the outside. Once you do something significant, other people might also recognize that there's something changed in the sukkah. All right, the Mishnah says, lo yatir, don't take down the walls, don't destroy the whole sukkah, because you might have to eat in the sukkah for the remainder of the day. So here you do something, this is a case where he's stuck. And he can't do anything, he has to do it prior to Yom Tov. So sometime prior to Yom Tov, he has to make this adjustment in order to allow him to sit there on Shmini Atzeret. Shua ben Levi Amar Madlik Bataner, just light a candle inside of there. Velo plige, and they don't argue. Halan Haluhu, depends who. Halan Haluhu is between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. In Eretz Yisrael, where you're doing this preparation on Hoshana Rabbah, which is Chol HaMoed, there you can be Soter the Sukkah. You can move the 4 Tefachim. In Chutz La'aretz, where on Shmini Atzeret you need to sit in the sukkah, you can't dismantle the sukkah to sit there on Simchat Torah, because you're not allowed to do melocha on Yom Tov. But you are allowed to light a candle on Yom Tov. For them, lighting the candles is what will change the dynamic inside of the sukkah. This has to do with the sugya that we did earlier in the Masechta, that you're not allowed to light a candle in the sukkah, you have to light the candle outside of the sukkah. And the Gemara says, Ha tinach sukkah ktana. That's only true in a small sukkah, because in a small sukkah there was the fire hazard, there's really a serious issue with lighting the candles in there. Nobody would live in there with the candle lit. So based on doing that, when you light the candle in there, it's clear that you're not living in there to be a sukkah, that you're trying to make it into a place that you're utilizing, but not a sukkah. So Gemara says, sukkah gdola ma yikad meimar. What about a sukkah gdola? How do you signify or signal that you're not trying to sit in there? For those people in chutzars who can't dismantle the sukkah, tamal ba mani michlo. That was the other thing we spoke about back on Daf Lamed Vav, which is certain things that you're not allowed to have in the sukkah. You're not allowed to leave dirty dishes in the sukkah. You're allowed to leave dirty cups in the sukkah, but not dirty dishes. There Rashi said it was the dishes that you eat off of. Tosafot said it's even the serving dishes. But once you've eaten off of them, once they're dirty, you don't leave them in the sukkah. Tosafot differentiated over there between the dishes which you're allowed to have in the sukkah until you utilize them. And once they're dirty, then you have to remove them. Versus the candle, the whole problem with the candle is lighting the candle in the sukkah. Forget about leaving the candle there, it's lighting the candle itself that's the problem. With the dishes, it's a residual problem, which is if you eat on them, you can't leave them there. So if you bring in the dirty dishes, it's clear that you've now, quote-unquote, dismantled your sukkah, because you're utilizing your sukkah in such a way that you wouldn't normally use it. So it's either dirty dishes that you've eaten on, or these are serving dishes. Tosafot over there mentions like a kneading trough, or certain types of utensils that you don't keep in your dining room. Those things would be problematic here. Tamar Rava, mana michla bar mitalalta. Utensils that you eat on have to be outside of the sukkah. Again, whether that means your residual plates after you've eaten on them or the serving dishes. Whereas mana demishtayo, the drinks or the cups, mitalalta. Then you can leave that in the sukkah, which is the fact that when you drink something, so even the dirty cups you keep around, that's not such a affront to the sukkah. That you have to worry about taking away the cups. You can leave the cups there, and that would not ruin the sense of sukkah. So in Eretz Yisrael, where you have the ability to do malacha, we're going to demand that you do something significant in the sukkah to ruin it in order to eat there on the eighth day. Whereas in Chutz La'aretz, where you're eating there on the eighth day, and it's Yom Tov already, you're going to have to do something that is less significant, but takes away the shame sukkah. So you can just wheel your barbecue into the sukkah, and that would, quote-unquote, ruin the sukkah. All right, now, next Mishnah. Nisuch HaMayim. How does Nisuch HaMayim work? Tzlochit shel zahav machzeket shlosha lugim hayam memalei min hashiloach. So they took down a pitcher, a barrel of some sort, to fill up water from the shiloach. Rashi says that's a spring outside of Yerushalayim. It's the main spring that fed into Ir David in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. So they used to descend there. That was down below, and that's where Chizkiyahu's tunnel is. Chizkiyahu put in a tunnel to move the flow of the water from outside of the city into the internal part of the city, and that's what the tunnel did. It took the spring which was outside the walls and brought it inside the walls so that an attacking enemy would not have access to the water. When they drew the water and they brought it up to the Mikdash and they reached Sharamayim, which is mentioned in the Mishnayot of the dimensions and the layout of the Mikdash, that on the southern side there was something called Sharamayim. And there were two reasons given. One is because that's where the water will come out in the time Yechezkel's Nevuah comes true. The other one is that's where they brought the Mayim in for the Nisuch HaMayim. So that's the shard that they came through. Taku'u, Variu, V'taku. They blew the Shofan entering there. Part of the celebration of bringing the Nisuch HaMayim, which the Gemara will ask about. Allah B'kevesh, he sends the ramp of the Mizbeach, Upanah the Smolo, and he turns to the left. Okay, this is unusual. Normally you turn to the right when you ascend the ramp. Here he turns to the left. Left means that he's going to the corner where it is the Maravit Dromit, that is the southwestern corner. Shnei Sfalim Shel Kesef Hayu Sham. There were two silver bowls that were there. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shel Sid Hayu. They were not silver, but they were made out of plaster. Tosafot asked the question, if they are silver bowls, how is it here that you drew the water with a gold pitcher? And now you're pouring into silver. Isn't that a drop down? We say always in the Mikdash, you have to be Malim Bikodesh Vein Moridim. So Tosafot makes a differentiation here that these silver bowls must have been plastered into the Mizbeach itself so that they're not considered to be Kelim, but rather a part of the Mizbeach. So things that are part of the Mizbeach, you don't worry about moving it from silver or gold onto the Mizbeach. So for instance, the Bazichei Levona that are on the Shulchan, they're in golden Bazichim, waiting to be put on the Mizbeach. And then when you put them on the Mizbeach, you don't worry about the fact they went from gold onto the Mizbeach. So too over here, the silver is a part of the Mizbeach. Therefore, you don't worry about taking it from a golden pitcher and putting it into the bowls. Ella shayu mashchirim pneihem pnei hayayin. So the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says it looked like silver is because they used to pour wine down there for the wine libations, and the wine caused discoloration of the sid to a blackened color. So that would be the equivalent of a tarnished silver. So people thought it might be silver because it was black or tarnished silver, and therefore they thought that the sid was silver, but it really wasn't silver. It was sid that was just discolored or tarnished. Umenukavim kamin shnei chutmim, and they were perforated like two, I call them snouts or noses, but not that each one of them had two holes in it. Each one had one hole. And they looked like a snout. Tosafot over here discusses what does it mean, chotem. Does chotem just simply mean that they have the perforations that have holes in them like a nose or a snout? Or they actually were standing up or came out a little bit. They protruded like a nose. Tosafot suggests maybe that was the case. Dakim, they're very narrow, these holes. Echad mi'uve v'echad dak. One of them was thick and one of them was thin. Rashi says that thick and thin over here means that one of them was wide and one of them was narrow. The hole itself was wide and narrow. Tosafot says it doesn't sound like that, that aveh and dak makes it sound like the base of the bowls or the base where these holes were. One was thicker and one was narrower. So one of them, the liquids drained faster and the other one it drained slower, which we'll discuss in the Gemara why that is. Hidei shiu shneim kalim bevatachat. They did this so they would end at the same time. Ma'arvo shomayim, the one towards the west. The one that was more westerly was used for the water. Mizracho shoyayin, and the one that was more easterly was used for the wine. Ira shomayim letoch shoyayim, shoyayim letoch shomayim, if you mix them up, yatsa. With the avad, it doesn't matter. Just the preference was that the western one was for water and the eastern one was for wine. Yudomer biloga yaminasech koshmona. So Rabbi Yehuda argues on two things. Number one, he says that they did not take shlosha lugim, but log echad. And he also says they didn't just do it for 7 days, they did nisuch hamayim on the 8th day as well. He thinks that there are 8 days of nisuch hamayim. In terms of the nisuch hamayim being 3 log, that's the smallest libation that we have in the Mikdash. That you remember from the laning on the Musafim, which is revi'it ahin. Ahin is 12 log. Revi'it ahin, a quarter of that is 3 log. So the smallest that goes with the keves, the smallest type of libation that we have, wine libation, is 3 log. So that's why the Chachamim say that the mayim comes as 3 log. Rabbi Yehuda says it's 1 log. We'll have to deal with Rabbi Yehuda's limud, where he knows that it's 1 log and where he knows it's 8 days from. Ulamanaseh chomer, though, they say to the one who's pouring the water libation, the people say to the Kohen who's doing pouring the water libation, Hagbel yadcha, raise your hand up. So you know how they do when they're in a fancy restaurant, they're pouring the wine, they pour it up from high and then they pour it down. So they're asking him to raise his hand and pour the water from a higher location, not directly over the bowl. Why? Shepam echad nasak echad agabi raglaf. Because one time, one of the Kohanim, instead of pouring it into the snout or the bowl, he poured it on his feet. Why did he do that? He was at Stuki. And he didn't believe in water libations, because water libations are not explicit in the Torah. They're either Allah HaMoshe Misinai or Limud, out of the Psukei Musafim of Sukkot. So because of that, he poured it on his feet, because he didn't want to do the water libation. People got wind of it. Urgamua, they stoned him, Kolam Etrogehem. They stoned him with their Etrogim. They were so upset at him. The same way that they do it on a weekday, they do it on Shabbat. Nisuch HaMayim happens on Shabbat as well. Ella, Shememalei Be'erev Shabbat, Chavit Shel Zahav, She'enu Mikudeshet Min HaShiloach. There, they brought up the water prior to Shabbat, because they can't bring it up from the Shiloach on Shabbat itself. But they used a Kli that was not Mikudash, that was not a Kli Sharet. Problem with the Kli Sharet is that you're going to have a problem of Lina, leaving it overnight. Once it's Kadosh, then leaving it through dawn the next morning, you're going to have a problem called Lina. So in order to prevent the problem of Lina, they brought it up the night before in a non-mikudash clay, and not a kli sharet. And they leave it in the chamber. And in the morning, they would start using it. They would utilize it. Nishpacha, if it spilled, or nitgalta, it was left uncovered overnight. Hayam mimalei min hakiyor, then it would fill up from the kiyor. Shayayin v'amayim migulim psulim negabe mizbeach. Water and wine that are left exposed overnight cannot be put on the mizbeach. Rashi claims over here the problem is that you're going to be chaser. Because the problem of mayim migulim is that we're afraid that a snake might have utilized them, drank from them, and deposited his venom inside of them. So Rashi says you're going to have a displacement. You're going to have the venom in there that's displacing the water or the yayin. And that's the problem here, that it's chaser. So that's what Rashi claims. Tosfot points out that tomorrow's Dava learned this. That's only true according to the Hava Mino of the Gemara. But according to the conclusion of the Gemara, that is not the reason. The problem, or the reason is, Mimashke Yisrael. The requirement that you can only put on the Mizbeach something that is ra'oi for Yisrael to drink. I mean, if it's not kosher for you to drink, it's not kosher to go on the Mizbeach. And since Mayim Migulim or Yayin Migulim, you couldn't drink, then you can't put it on the Mizbeach, which is HaKurevu Nala Pechatcha. You want to give your bad stuff to Hashem, stuff that you can't drink, that's what you're going to put on the Mizbeach for Hashem. So that's not allowed. Many try to answer for Rashi. It's not so easy to answer for Rashi. Sometimes Rashi does this, especially on a Mishnah, is that Rashi gives you the Havamina of the Gemara. Because if Rashi gives you the Maskana of the Gemara, then you'll never be able to read the Gemara when you get there and understand what the Havamina of the Gemara is. Because Rashi already told you the Maskana in the Mishnah. So sometimes Rashi will give you the Havamina in the Mishnah so that when you read the Gemara, it would flow and make sense that you have a Havamina and then brings the Maskana afterwards. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that there might be a difference here with regards to the venom or with regards to the problem of drinking Mayim Migulim or Yayim Migulim. Problem might not be Mimashke Yisrael because the reason you can't drink it is not because it's Asur. It's not Asur Mitzad Adin. It's not Asur because of a Torah prohibition. The problem here is a problem of sakana, not a problem of isur. And so that might be different. The reason that we tell you not to drink these items is because there's risk involved in drinking them. It's not because they're inherently asur. There's a risk in you drinking them. For the Mizbeach, that risk doesn't exist. Since that risk doesn't exist, then we don't worry about putting it on the Mizbeach. And that's why Rashi went to the other reasoning. Either way, we'll get to that in the Gemara. Just interesting to note that Rashi gave one reason, whereas the Gemara concludes with a different reason. Where do we know this from? Rashi claims this question is, how do you know that you do tkiya, trua, utkiya, when you draw the water and you bring it into the Mikdash? That's where Rashi says the question is. Tosafot suggests that the question might be, how do you know that you have to use mei shiloach? How do you have to know that you have to draw the water from a live spring? The Tosafot says the question is about the live spring. Rashi says, how do you know you need to celebrate? Now the answer comes from the same pasuk, which is, Amarav Ina Damakra Ushafte Mayim Bisason. So now Bisason answers Rashi's question. How do you know you have to do it with Simcha? It's because here it says Ushafte Mayim Bisason. You have to do it in joy. Tosafot's question is answered from the second half of the pasuk. It says Bechule, which is Shafte Mayim Bisason Mi Mayanei HaYeshua. That's brought from the spring of salvation. So it has to come in Mayan. It has to come from a spring. So that answers both questions. That why you bring it from the Mei Shiloach and why it has to be done Bisimcha. Because of the pasuk Ushafte Mayim Bisason. Why the kior works then as a double is a good question. Why does the kior suffice then if you need mayan? So there are two possibilities. One is that the kior is fed by a mayan, Ein Etam. We know that Ein Etam, they brought through the aqueduct system the water to Yerushalayim, and that filled possibly the bore of the kior. So that's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that Mimaineya Yeshua could be just the chatchila. B'diavad, you can use the mei kior if you have to use them. Right now, Hanu Trei Mine. A little story. There were two minim, which again in the Gemara you have to loosely translate as apostates. It's hard to know because of the censorship of the Gemara. Many words were changed into minim. The word min was used in many places and lacked definition or differentiation. Minim could refer to what they call the early Jewish Christians who had converted at that time period, or it has to do with the min, which is someone who is a heretic. Because of the censorship of the Gemara, it's no longer clear which it was referring to. Chad Shmei Sason, Chad Shmei Simcha. That one had the name Sason, one had the name Simcha. Amalei Sason the Simcha. Sason says the Simcha, Ana Adifna Minach. I'm much better than you. Tichtiv, Sason v'Simcha Yasigo, v'Nasu Yagon v'Anacha. So where do you see in the pasuk? It says, Sason comes before Simcha. So Sason says, I'm better, because Sason comes before Simcha. Amalei Simcha the Sason. Simcha says back to Sason, Ana Adifna Minach. I'm even better than you. Tichtiv, we just read it in the Megillah. It's interesting how the Gemara quotes it. It says, Simcha v'sason liyudim. Many times the Gemara doesn't quote the pasuk exactly. It quotes the tenor of the pasuk. But thereafter, here's the simcha and the sason. That refers to the yudim, but that's not in the pasuk. We know how the pasuk is laid out. So here you have simcha before sason. So I'm better than you. Amalei sason the simcha. Chad yoma shavkuch v'shavyuch parvanka. One day they're just going to take you and make you into a runner for the king. You're become a messenger of the king. Dichtiv, ki b'simcha teitzeu, u'v'shalom tuvalon. It's the parak in Yishayahu that we read as the haftorah for a fast day. So there it says, ki b'simcha teitzeu, b'simcha, they're going to send out, they're going to go out. So they're going to make you into a messenger one day. You're going to just become a messenger for the decrees of the king. And they simcha the sason, simcha says back to sason, chad yoma shapuch, malubach maya. One day they're going to let you go and they're going to start filling water with you. That they drew water with sason. Interesting, agadata. We're going to have another little story here, and then we'll try to give some framework to it. Amalu halmina dishmei sason. this min that his name was Sason comes to Rabbi Bo and says, in the Olam Haba, you're going to be filling water for me. He says, you're going to have to fill water, draw water for Sason. So you guys in the Atid Lavot, you're going to be taking care of me and you're going to be drawing water for me. I'm like, if I have a ketiv, the pasuk says, "Ushapte mayim lisason," you would have been right for sason. Kedamart hashre ketiv bisason says, "Ushapte mayim bisason with sason." That means mashcheid al gavra mishavin legudal. They're going to make your skin into flasks, water flasks, and they're going to draw the water with you. Alina bay mayo, and they're going to fill the water with you. The Malbim has a sefer Tzara Milim where he takes words that are what we call milim nirdafot, which are words that seem synonymous, and tries to draw a distinction between them, like ira and pachad. Takes two words, which are both fear. One is a long-lasting residual fear, and another one is a sudden fear. So that's how he describes the difference between ira and pachad. So the same thing comes up with sason and simcha. The Gra makes a similar distinction between sason and simcha. One is a long-lasting joy, and one is a spontaneous type of joy. So that's the first thing, the difference between sason and simcha. His argument, which is better? Is that joy of spontaneity, is that better? Or is that something that permeates the individual and the person that makes them joyous over a long period of time, is that better type of simcha? So that could be the argument between sason and simcha. To hear the statement of sason to Rabbi Yabou might have to do with the difference between ikar and tafel, or what we call the means and the end. Many times this happens, it's an unfortunate thing, but it happens not just in religious life, it happens in many other places, that sometimes people think the means are the end, and therefore they focus on the means instead of getting to the end or the tozah, the end game that they want. So over here, sason is focused on that's the end game. Sason is everything. So he says, latid lavo, in the Olam Haba, you're going to bring wrong water to sason, because sason is the focus. Rabbi Bo answers him and says, no, sason's not the focus. Sason is just the cup, the utensil that brings the water. The ikar is the water. The sason is just a vehicle for attaining the water, attaining Olam Haba. We know that water represents Torah. So that sason is only something that engenders, whether it's nevuah, we know that from a story by Elisha, they brought them in again so that he would have a ruach nevuah. So first of all, in terms of spiritual attainment and nevuah, we know that simcha is an important factor. The Gemara in Brachot says, "Ein shchina shora," except on a person that has simcha. And we also know with learning Torah that a person has to have a state of mind where they're in a proper state of mind in order to learn Torah. So therefore, this is a vehicle. Sason could be a vehicle for attainment of spiritual heights, but it's not the end game. The Declaration of Independence says, right, in the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of happiness is not an end in of itself, although many people think that that is the end game. Now, pursuit of happiness is the ability to use happiness as a vehicle for other achievements or attainments. All right. Allah bekevesh upanan lasmolo. Tan rabanan. Kol olim lemizbeach olim derech yamin. Anybody goes up to Mizbeach, goes to the right, umakifim yordim derech small. And then they come down what would be the left side when you ascended the ramp. So when you ascend the Mizbeach, just to give perspective here, when you ascend the Mizbeach, you're walking up, you stay to the right side of the ramp. When you get to the top, you turn right. Now, once you hit the first corner, you're actually going to turn left. If you're walking along, you're going to actually turn left. So what Rashi explains is that when you walk around the Mizbeach, you're always facing the Mizbeach. So if you're always facing internally to the Mizbeach, then you're always moving to your right side. So if you were to walk sideways, facing the Mizbeach, you would always be moving towards your right as you circumscribe the Mizbeach. Then when you descend, walk down on the left side of what it would have been on your ascent of the ramp, the left side, but now is your right side as you continue down the ramp. Right? Chutz min ha'olah l'shlosha dvarim halalu. There are three exceptions to that rule where you do not turn to the right, but rather you turn to the left. Sholim derech small. They go up and turn left. Chozrin al Ekev, and then they come back, they turn on their heel and come back, meaning that they do a U-turn and come back down. Veiluhen, and these are they. Now, Tosafot on the Amud Aleph quotes Rashi as saying something, which Rashi doesn't say. We have an extra word in Rashi, which negates Tosafot's claim. Rashi over here says that we want to minimize the amount of walking. That's what Tosafot says, Rashi says. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says we want to minimize the times that you go to the left. So when you walk up and you turn to the left, when you're going to descend, if you were to continue in the direction that you're going, you would continue to be turning left because you're facing the Mizbeach. So when you face the Mizbeach, when you get to that location you need to be, the Marvit Romit, the southwestern corner, if you return to your right, then we minimize the amount of time you walk to the left, so you just return the way that you came up, because that would be turning right. So that's the extra word that Rashi adds in, that Tosfot didn't have in Rashi, but But now they say the same thing, which is that we want to minimize the amount of time you can go to your left and go to your right. So here you go up and you turn down. What are those three things? For wine libations and water libations, we ask that you go to the left immediately. That's because if you were to walk around the entire mizbeach, the problem of what's called the mashana maracha, you would have the smoke of the pyre on the mizbeach, and that might ruin the wine libation or ruin the water libation. The smoke could ruin them by walking all the way around. It's a large area to go around. It's almost 100 amot of circumscribing here. The top of the mizbeach is 28 by 28. So he has to go around three sides of that. So it's a pretty big area that you're going to have to go around, and the smoke is coming out, billowing out of the mizbeach. Even though, again, one of the miracles was that the smoke went upwards. But nevertheless, they were afraid of the smoke getting into the water or the wine, and therefore they went to the left immediately to do the libations at the southwestern corner. For Latov, Shirabto b'mizrach. Main location for Latov is on the southeastern corner. The reason for that is that you have to throw the leftovers of the Latov. You have to throw it to the Beit HaDeshen. The Beit HaDeshen is on the eastern side of the ramp, three tefachim away from the ramp itself. We learned about that in the Gemarot in Kodoshim. So the Kohen has to throw it. So from the southeastern corner, it's the easiest place to throw it to that location of the Beit HaDeshen. But when there were too many Kohanim doing a Lo Ta'of over there, they started to slide over to the west. They moved westerly. So the reason he would go to the west is because there are already too many Kohanim on the eastern side, and he moved to the west. So that's why he would go over to the left, because there's no reason to go to the right. Right away, he'd go to the west. There you have a problem of the bird choking on the smoke going around. So he goes quickly to the left, goes right to the location where he needs to do it. Right? Eloshayu mashchirim. Bishloma de yayin mashchir. I understand why the one that you poured the wine libations down turned black. The discoloration came from the wine, from the alcohol of the wine. But d'maya amay mashchir. When you pour water down there, it should just wash the sid. It should not blacken the sid. So why does it say here that they both look like tarnished silver? So it came to Mar Mar because the Mishnah says, Ira shomayim letoch shoyam, shoyam letoch shomayim yatsa. If he makes a mistake and uses one of the other ones, by mistake it's okay. Shomayim ati leshchure. There are times when the water one also became discolored because somebody poured wine down there by accident. Umnukavim kemein beit chotmim. And it looks like it has these two snouts to it. Now here you have a machloket Rashi and Tosafot exactly what's happening. Rashi describes here that there were two bowls on top. And the bowls had these perforations in them, and then they descended, according to Rashi, onto the Mizbeach. And then from the Mizbeach, there was a drain on the Mizbeach that drained them down into the Shittin, down below. That's the way Rashi has it. Tosafot says, it's interesting, but I don't, where did Rashi come up with this? That it flowed onto the Mizbeach and then drained off the Mizbeach in a single hole. Tosafot says, I don't understand where Rashi got this from. It rather, they were two bowls with perforations in them, and those two holes descended down the side of the Mizbeach into the Shittin directly. Says, I don't know why it has to go on the Mizbeach. I think my gut would be that Rashi's explanation has to do with the fact that it's a wine libation or that it's a water libation. What's its association with the Mizbeach? What does it mean that they are poured onto the Mizbeach? So if you pour them into these chotamot on the side at the Karen, that's over there, maybe it isn't considered to be on the Mizbeach. What does it mean on the Mizbeach? It means on the roof, the top of the Mizbeach. How do I do that? I pour them in there, they flow onto the Mizbeach, and then drain off of the Mizbeach. Maybe that's what drove Rashi to explain it that way, but that's Rashi's explanation of the libations, how they worked, whereas Tosafot explains that they're draining directly down. The other thing might have to do with the Gemara that we're about to read, where the Gemara gives an explanation which may make more sense according to Rashi. Which is Lema Matnitin Rabbi Yehuda Velo Rabbanan. Let's say our mission is Rabbi Yehuda, not the Rabbanan. It's not. Rabbi Yehuda Mer Belog Hayam Inasech. He used to pour a single log of water Koshmana for all 8 days. Di Rabbanan Ki Adadin Inhu. If it's a Rabbanan, then they're equal. You have three log of water and three log of wine. Why would you have to change the size of the holes then? Because they're both the same size. So what the Gemara is after here is that they want them to descend Bevat Achat. If you pour a wine libation and a water libation at the same time, they would descend at the same speed. Same at the same rate, the same speed. So now, for Rashi, that makes sense, because they're descending onto the top of the Mizbeach, so when you pour them, you want them to get onto the roof of the Mizbeach at the same time. According to Tosafot, where they're descending into the Shittin, whoever sees where they're dropping to, they come to, and how fast they're going down, why would it matter? No, you could build it in a manner that it does that. But it seems less relevant than to what Rashi is saying, where they're going to actually come onto the top of the Mizbeach. The Shittin is the drainage system out of the Mikdash, which is that there's a very large pit under the Mizbeach, which descends down basically to the Tahom, basically down to the water table, and allows things to drain out of there. There's a large cave that the Gemara tells us that the young Kohanim used to go in there once every 70 years, and they used to clear out all the coagulated wine and stuff that gathered down there, clear out the drainage system that went out that way. In the part of the excavations on the Har HaBayit, they did find these caves up there. Now, the only problem is that those caves are not exactly where we think the Mizbeach is. They're actually closer to where what they call the Eben HaShtiyah is. And therefore, there was a writer who wants to suggest that the location of the Mizbeach is actually different than the location that we think. That location of the Mizbeach is not where we think, and that the Dome of the Rock is over where the Kodesh HaKodeshim was, but rather the Dome of the Rock is over the Mizbeach was, and not where the Aron was. And he brings a number of proofs to that, including writings by, I think, the Eben Ezra, or some of the Rishonim, who suggest that nothing was ever built over Makom HaKodesh HaKodeshim. In his time, the Dome of the Rock was already built. So how does he say there was nothing over Makom Aron, except if you think that that was Makom Mizbeach and not the Makom Aron. So he claims that those caves, those shafts that were found there, were actually part of this structure of the Mizbeach rather than where the Aron was placed. All right, so now the Gemara suggests, based on that, that it must be Rabbi Yehuda who has this issue of having one pipe bigger than the other or thicker than the other, because Rabbi Yehuda has differentiated sizes. He has one log for the water and three log for the yayin, so he would need that differentiation to have them come at the same pace. The Rabbanon have three log yayin, three log mayim. Why do they need it to be differentiated? It should be able to go down at the same pace. So that's what Mar says, no, afilu teimer Rabbanon, chamra samich, wine is more viscous, maya kalish, water is less viscous, is more of a flow. Wine flows at a slower rate than water. So because of that, you would have to differentiate the size just to have them keep the same pace because of the nature of wine versus water. Right? Achanami mistavra makes sense at this Rabbanon because the Rabbi Yehuda, from Rabbi Yehuda, we heard the words Rachav v'Katzari. When he describes the pipes, he doesn't describe them as being what we have in our Mishnah, which is Dak and Aveh, Me'uveh. He describes them as being Katzar and Rachav. So Rash says the difference between them is the extent. Lo shem Me'uveh v'Dak, Rachav mashma yoter ala Katzar. Tfei mi'itura de Me'uveh ala Me'dak. Thick versus thin, he says, is a small differentiation. Rachav versus Katzar is a bigger differentiation. So he says that Rabbi Yehuda has terminology that has a bigger differentiation than that which the Chachamim say, which would make sense, because Rabbi Yehuda has a bigger difference. He has one log of water versus three log of yayin, so he needs to create a bigger differentiation to keep the pace. The Rabbanon, who have three log of each, they only need a smaller differential because of the viscosity to make it go at the same pace. So that's how Rashi describes it. Tosafot has an issue, I mentioned before, that when he says me'uveh, thickness, Rashi says it's talking about the width of the pipe. How wide the pipe is. So Rashi says both of them are talking about the width of the pipe. Tosafot says muven dak doesn't sound like that. Muven dak seems to sound like the thickness of the pipe itself. So Tosafot seems to indicate that it's the length of the pipe or the thickness of the base of the bowl, so that it was longer and it took more time to go through. That's the way Tosafot describes it. He says muven dak don't seem to be talking about width. They seem to be talking about depth. So Tosafot gives a slightly different explanation for it. All right, now the Gemara says, "Katzaritay, Tatani, Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Shnei Ksavot Hayu Sham, Echad Shomayim Echad Shel Yayin." There were two Ksavot, is either Kelim, as the Orach translates. I would say it relates to the Ksavot that are used by the Shulchan, by the Lechem Apanim. There they also have Ksavot, and those Ksavot are pipe-like pieces that held up the trays for the Shulchan. So there the Ksavot actually are similar to pipes, piping. So Ayusham, Echad Shomayim, Echad Shel Yayin, one of water, one of yayin, Shel Yayin Pia Rachav, Shomayim Pia Katzar. So he uses the terms Rachav and Katzar, not Meuveh and Dak, like we have in our Mishnah. Kedei Shiu Shneim Kalim Bevat Achad Shvamina, so they both end at the same time, so it's clear that our Mishnah is not Rabbi Yehuda, because our Mishnah uses Av and Dak. For Rashi, that has to do with the width of the pipe. Again, Tosafot has to do with the length of the pipe. Darabana, Masevet Stuki Echad Shnisecha Gabi Raglav, Ragmu Akol Am Bechu Geem. They stoned them with their Chugim. Oto Yom Nifgema Karen HaMizbeach. They caused damage to the Karen on the Mizbeach. They Yerbul Shomelach, they brought a pile of salt, block of salt, with Setmua, and they filled it in to make it look okay. Below Minesh Ukshad Abuda, not because putting the salt in there solves your problem, now you can use the Mizbeach. You can't use the Mizbeach. Minesh Lo Yeh Mizbeach Pagum. Just a aesthetic thing. Kol Mizbeach Shein Lo Lo Kevesh, the Lo Karen. Any Mizbeach doesn't have a ramp, doesn't have a Karen, doesn't have the corners. Velo Yisod, it doesn't have the base. Velo Ribua, and it's not squared out. Pasuli Abuda, you cannot use it. So here you have a problem in the Karen, because it's missing a Karen. We'll discuss that in one second. Yossi Bar Yehuda Omer Af Suvev. You also have the Suvev. The Suvev is the part in the middle of the Mizbeach, which the Kohanim walked around on. That has to do with the Machloket about the word Karkov. in the Torah. The Mizbeach describing as having a karkov. Karkov ha-Mizbeach. There's a machloket whether karkov means a soveiv, an area for the Kohanim to walk around, or karkov was decorative in nature. It was kior. It was a decorative area or netting around the Mizbeach to stop them from slipping. There's different definition of karkov. So according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, karkov was actually the soveiv. Now, the way that Rashi explains this is anytime the Torah says ha-Mizbeach, then ha-Mizbeach is me'akev. So therefore, when we have psukim, al-karnot ha-Mizbeach, that means the karnot of the Mizbeach, so that means that's the definition of Mizbeach. Ha-Mizbeach is defined by karnot. It has to have a keret. Or when it says el-pnei ha-Mizbeach, then the Mizbeach has a face. What's the face of Mizbeach? That's the ramp going up there. So that's me'akev. Or it says that yusod. It says el-yusod ha-Mizbeach. So the ha-Mizbeach is defined by yusod, so it has to be there. And ribua, it says, k'tiv ravuayeh ha-Mizbeach. The Mizbeach should be squared out. So all of these items are requirements that are ma'akev because it says ha-Mizbeach. Tosafot poses the question, he says, by Karen, we have no way of knowing that it has to be square. It says ravuayeh ha-Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is square. It never says that the Karen has to be square. So Tosafot says, must be an extrapolation from Mizbeach to Karen that is actually square. And then Tosafot says, how did they actually make the Karen? The Karen is an amah by an amah by an amah. So Rashi says over here, they had a stone that was an amah by an amah by an amah. Tosafot says that's impossible, because the Gemara in Zvachim tells us how they built the Mizbeach. They used to build forms of the size and fill them with stones and then with the binding material in them. And Tosafot says you can't have it be a stone because you would have to cut the stone. And cutting the stone makes it unusable for the Mizbeach for two reasons. He says number one is, if you cut it, it's nifgema. It would get a pgam in it. When you cut it, you can't cut it cleanly and it won't have a pgam in it. If you have a pgam in it, it's no good. And even if you were able to cut it cleanly with metal, you're not allowed to put metal. You're not allowed to put metal on the Mizbeach. So for that reason, you can't cut the stones of the Mizbeach. So it's impossible, Rashi says, that there was a stone, an amah by an amah by an amah, to be perfectly sized for the Keren. Ella, they had to fill a form. They filled the form, which is they put in, as Tosafot says, the Gemara there says, they took smooth stones that were there. Miyaseh Breshit would never cut. If you quarried the stones, you couldn't use them. If they were broken or cut in any way, it would be problematic. So riverbed stones, exactly. They used riverbed stones that were smooth and there, meaning Maaseh Breishit. They piled them into the form, and then they filled in the binding material to make them Mizbeach. So he says they did the same thing by the Keren. He spends a lot of time here. There's a large Tosafot here about whether there was a Shamir in the second Beit HaMikdash. Why couldn't they use this Shamir? So he says that even with the Shamir they cut, it left a Nifgema. So anyway, that Tosafot's discussion over here of discussing basically how they got to the Keren. But the answer is that they damaged the Keren. Most likely they hit it and they knocked some of the binding material out of it. They needed to replaster, they needed to reset it, but they didn't have time to do that on Yom Tov, they couldn't do it right away. So they just put in a block of salt, which is white and fits in, they could mold it to that area for temporarily to make it look good, but they couldn't use the Mizbeach in the interim until they fixed it. So once they fixed it, then they put it back into service. But this was a result of this stoning of the Kohen who was doing the Nisach HaMayim on his feet. Okay, we'll stop over here.